You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Monday morning to you. Happy Mother's Day to everybody who's a mother out there. Yeah, hope you had a good hope you had a good Mother's Day. A lot of pressure on people to perform on Mother's Day. So hope everybody out there who's got a mom didn't screw it up. Yeah, you know who you are. So good Monday morning to you. A ton of news, right? Over the course of the weekend, I spent the weekend finishing up projects. I said I was without a project, but one got created for me. My sprinklers had an issue. And sprinklers and lawn irrigation, yeah, it's my specialty. Or maybe not my specialty, it's my obsession. I will go to Home Depot 1,000 times. I will screw it up forever. But I am relentless in my pursuit of perfection relative to water irrigation. So did that. Put up some blinds in Colleen's room and did some other tinkering around the house. Took Jack and Joe on a drive down the coast yesterday. Drove down to Laguna Beach. Not my favorite place. A little bit too artsy for me. Yeah, so you got all the artsy people out acting, you know, being themselves, you know, whatever. Just kind of sort of not my thing. I tolerate it, but to me, sometimes it gets a tad phony, so I don't really go out of my way. So I was driving down the Coast Highway, and my cousin Tom called, and he says, "So you're going to go down?" He said, "I love that drive, you know, down towards Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach, blah, blah." I said, "Yeah, I'm going north towards Long Beach." And then I thought, "No, I'll go south because it is a pretty drive." And so that's what I did. So I went for a drive and then came home and cooked a little salmon and watched a little TV and crashed. So anyway, I would tell you the biggest news from late last week is an op-ed that was written by James Webb on the future of the Marine Corps. And I posted something. I took the article. It's published in the National Interest, but you can find it on his website. So if you go to jameswebb.com and then you go to the tab that says articles, things that have been written by him, you'll see it, the future of the Marine Corps. And it is, as one might expect, it is pretty impressive. Let me tell you my experience with Jim Webb. And it's not much, but it was awesome. So I'm a first lieutenant. I'm the executive officer of the Marine Detachment on the USS Ranger. We are in the North Arabian Sea. We, on the deployment, we're supposed to go from San Diego to, there was a question whether we would stop in Hawaii. We did not. We then go to the Philippines. I'd never been. And we were in the Philippines for 2 days, replenishing the ship. We're supposed to have some maintenance done, so we're going to be there for about 5 or 6. And Typhoon comes, and SOP in the Navy, when you're on a ship, is you go to sea. So the ship doesn't get tied up or beat up, tied up next to the pier. So we go to sea. I think, I'm not sure, we went to Hong Kong and Singapore. I think we just went to Singapore for a couple days, and then we went straight to the North Arabian Sea. And we're in the North Arabian Sea for 103 straight days. Yep, we just stayed there. And so Webb comes out. He flies out to the Ranger. And the Iowa was out there with us for a while. So the Iowa decides they're going to put on a show for the Secretary of Navy. So he's on the Ranger. I think he had flown over to the Iowa. So the Ranger pulls up right behind the Iowa. And we weren't like asshole to belly button because ships don't normally do that. But in nautical terms, we were kind of like that. We were close. And you know, battleships, if you ever saw them, I mean, nothing looked like it, right? They had that low silhouette and kind of that low center beam, if you will. And then, you know, the bow protrudes up a little bit and the ass end protrudes up a little bit, or at least it has that look to it. So anyway, they looked awesome. So they shut down flight operations. You're allowed to go up on the flight deck because the Iowa, the USS Iowa, is going to slew all 9 16-inch guns to one side, right, and fire in a demonstration for the Secretary of the Navy. And it's like, okay, when are you ever going to get a chance like this again? So, and the answer is, you're not. So my ass was up there. And I remember thinking when it fired, holy shit, if that's what it looks like coming out, I mean, what does it look like when it impacts? Because all you saw was fire, right? I mean, essentially, the world is blacked out by fire on the starboard side of the Iowa. Just this massive wall of fire. And I'll never forget, I have a video of it someplace. And in the video, they shoot, I don't know if they shot a 5-inch gun, you know, as a warning or as a signal. I don't know because I wasn't on the Iowa. And somebody says, is that it? So somebody, you know, I mean, there's a crowd of, you know, a few thousand sailors, you know, and Marines on the flight deck of the Ranger watching the Iowa in front of us. So they shoot a single 5-inch gun. And you're like, is that, like, what was that? And then they let it rip and everybody's like, oh my God. So anyway, later while he was out, the Secretary of the Navy, Mr. Webb at the time, now, know this, he's a 1-5 guy. I'm a 1-5 guy. Yeah. He's a 1-5 Vietnam guy, 2 Purple Hearts, right? Anyway, now he's the Secretary of the Navy. So the first time I see him is he's going to speak to in the wardroom to the officers of the ship. And he went and he did the same thing in the chief's mess and whatnot. So and then he had conversations with sailors, and then he ultimately came down to see the Marines in the Marine detachment area. But anyway, I remember sitting there. I'd never, you know, I'd read Fields of Fire as a lieutenant, and he, it was a good book. That's what I knew about him. And so now I see him, and he was one of the smartest guys I've ever seen in my life. And it did not matter what the question that was asked about the Navy retirement system, about, you know, how many ships that were going to be in the Navy, about deployment schedules. I just remember sitting there thinking, wow, he is smart as a whip, right, on all these different issues, and articulate as the day is long. And I would tell you he's Zinni-esque, in my opinion. Yeah. And so I was completely blown away by not only his intellectual depth and breadth, I was blown away by his ability to articulate, right, you know, the things that, you know, he was trying to communicate. It was fantastic. Later on that day, he comes down to see the Marines in the Marine detachment area. Now, look, there's a ship of, 5,000? And there was 70 Marines on board. Okay? We guarded the nuclear weapons and the ship when it was important. So anyway, so he comes down to see us. We have everybody that's not on duty crammed into our rec room, right, and waiting for him. And then our CO, who was an arty guy, oh, but you know, the Secretary of the Navy's there, so he's got to go. Like, Mac, you don't need to go. I'll go. I'm like, oh. So I escort every other person, but I, you know, the infantry officer that happens to be, the 1-5 infantry officer that happens to be the Secretary of the Navy. And he looks at me and he says, don't even waste your time. I got it. I'm like, all right. So I'm in there, and he comes walking in, and the Marines just throw a fit, right? First Marine to ever be the Secretary of the Navy, right? Richard Spencer was the second. And they both resigned, oddly enough. So anyway, he walks in, as I said, the Marines go crazy. And he puts his hand up and he's smiling. And he says, how's it going, Devil Dogs? And they go crazy again. And so he gives a little talk to everybody, right, about, you know, what we're out here doing and the importance of it and our mission. And we were on the outside of the ship, you know. I remember him saying that the intelligence threat is real. Your mission every day is important. So, you know, pay attention out there. I know sometimes it gets boring out here, but the physical security of this ship and blah, blah, blah. And so he starts taking questions, and somebody says, what's it like being the first Marine as a Secretary of the Navy? And he says, well, let me just point something out. Not only am I the first Marine that's been the Secretary of the Navy, I'm the first Marine to have one of these, too. And with that, he's got a short sleeve shirt up. He pulls his sleeve up, and on his shoulder, there's a tattoo of a sunrise, and there's a girl in the silhouette of the sun. And below that it says, I think, USMC. And the Marines see that, and they throw a fit. And he looks at everybody and goes, how about that? And the Marines are going crazy. So later on, I mean, as he's getting ready to walk out, he sees me, and he goes, Lieutenant McNamara. I said, McNamara, sir. And he says, good Irish name. I said, it's a 1-5 Irish name, too. And he looks at me, and he goes, nice, which company? And I said, Charlie. He said, wrong company. And so he just said, how are things going out here? And I said, fine, sir. Awesome. Thank you for coming down. He said, no. He said, come on, to be with Marines in the midst of all these sailors? He said, I need to keep my sanity. and laughed, and he said, hey, keep up the good work. And then he left. So my interaction was limited, but he was awesome. He was awesome. His op-ed takes the commandant of the Marine Corps to task. And a lot of things that you've heard expressed on the program, he articulates in his op-ed. So I'll post that in the piece. Over the course of, I mean, I've spoken literally to dozens of people about these issues, because I'm one of the few people. I'm one of the few people that talks about this stuff. And so, so I know a lot of people and they reach out to me. And Webb speaks for the vast majority of the people that I've spoken to. I mean, just about, and I say he speaks to 99% of the people that I've spoken to, which is, you know, which is not good. Okay. Now, let me tell you the problem with all of this. And this is what I wrote. Okay. To say there is currently great concern in the air for the future of the Marine Corps would be an understatement. I have spoken with many senior Marines who will not go public with their concern, but suffice it to say that their collective concern is for the existence of the Marine Corps. Senator James Webb, the former 1-5 platoon commander in Vietnam, Secretary of Navy, and Senator from Virginia, articulates these collective concerns in this article. The unarticulated collective concern is that the credible criticism, that this credible criticism is going unheeded and is falling on deaf ears. And to me, that's the bigger problem. We can have a difference of opinion of how the Marine Corps, people believe the Marine Corps ought to face the future. Okay? But what any institution that's a growing, vibrant institution can't have is intellectual intolerance. And that's where I believe General Berger has gotten himself. He has not listened to people that are retired. He has not listened to people that are on active duty. And again, that's not my impression talking to two people. I know that for a fact by talking to dozens of people. So, Grant Newsham's going to come on today. And he's written a little bit about Marine Corps force design. So we'll talk to Grant about that. And so this will be – and then Will Cosentini, who you heard talking last week or 2 weeks ago, something like that. I actually heard from his mom. Yeah, Will's mom sent me a text message. I've never met her. So she thanked me for interviewing her son. And said she, remember he says, I don't know why I joined the Marine Corps. She said, she told me, I remember why. And she said, I think he forgot. Like, who forgets? Who forgets? So anyway, so Will's going to join us tomorrow. We'll talk about that. And then hopefully we'll have the second part of Ray Linebaugh's interview. About he with Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, at Contien during Operation Buffalo and afterwards. So if you haven't listened to that, I would tell you do that. Do that. Pretty important. I mean, not pretty important, but it's you know, this discussion of peer warfare. You want to hear what it's like? Listen to this. And so anyway. So, yeah, and then Lynch and Kenny on Thursday, and I'm not sure, maybe another best of on Friday. The chef, to update his condition. While he's still in ICU, they have upgraded his condition to whatever, better. And so he doesn't have intubated anymore. His wife Beth got to see him on Saturday, and so he's alert and everything like that. So good news relative to the chef. So I don't know, I might continue my tribute to him. And you know, while he was in intensive care, he and I did a segment once called, you know, we were talking about putting the fun back in funerals. And it's really funny, right? It's about things like recording your own eulogy. And so, but I didn't think it was appropriate for me to play it while he was in intensive care. So you might hear that, because honestly, I listened to it the other night and I was laughing my ass off, and I knew what was coming. I still say this to my kids. You know you're funny when you were involved in something and you listen to it a second time and it makes you laugh again. That's like straight up funny. My kids are like, whatever. So, stuff in the news that we'll talk about today here in a little bit. I'm going to play some audio of Mike Flynn's lawyer appearing on a program yesterday with Maria Bartiromo. Now, Maria Bartiromo, she's a business person that does news and has grown onto the news side of it, coming from the business side, right? She's not a hack. Okay. Now, I could give you the name of hacks, but I won't. You know who they are. You know what they do. Okay. And so, I want to play a little bit of audio from her program over the weekend. And I said last week, the most disturbing part of all of this information that has come out about Mike Flynn and the conduct of the Justice Department and the FBI while Barack Obama was president of the United States was that the word conspiracy pops into your head. And that's the Watergate word, right? For those of us old enough to remember, you know, all these news stories, who knew what, who told who, doesn't impact the White House, then it got linked to the White House, right? H.R. Haldeman, John Ehrlichman, right? Two guys from UCLA. So anyway, right, you heard those names. Yeah, but the president wasn't part of it, you know. And then it got linked to the president. Well, this thing is linked to Barack Obama. And as you string, if you were going to try to orchestrate this and you were going to problem solve it, I mean, imagine like, okay, so what gets this thing moving? A fake dossier. Yeah, but at some point it's got to be vetted for us to action it, right? Well, no. Well, yeah, but if we want to collect on Carter Page and blah, 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 we got to go to the FISA court. I mean, don't we have to validate some of it? Probably not. And then by the time what do we do? Well, then we'll leak pieces. It's like, nah, you know, what you're describing to me is too fantastic. We could never do it. And so... the disturbing thing that came out to me is the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, writing that she was stunned to learn that the president of the United States, Barack Obama at the time, had detailed knowledge of something that Sally Yates did not know about. So how did this happen? How did this happen? And all the things that happened subsequently, they happened with the permission of the president, the permission and the knowledge of the president of the United States. that's, I mean, what else do you call it but a conspiracy? Because the rule of law isn't followed. Now, I'll tell you what. Barack Obama hasn't said anything about this. And then over the weekend, right, we hear him talking about, you know, all of a sudden when he's implicated, and I would tell you, in a conspiracy, all of a sudden he comes out, slams the Trump administration's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, right, attacks Bill Barr and his decision, saying, I mean, it's what he said was laughable, that that this calls into question the very nature of the rule of law in our system. And I think what the majority of reasonable Americans are thinking is, you completely threw the law, the rule of law, out the window in this case. And it starts with that bunch of bullshit that is the Steele dossier, that's then paid for by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party. And it just goes from there. You're talking about that rule of law? Oh, okay. So I'll play a little audio for you from that. I also read something that I thought was interesting. And what I do with articles like this is I pull them out, and then I paste them into a Microsoft Word document, and then I highlight them and I put notes on it. This is entitled, it's from The Atlantic. Now, I don't know if The Atlantic is left or right. I lose track of some of these things, right? Take the shutdown skeptic seriously. This is not a straightforward battle between pro-human and pro-economy camps. So that's pretty interesting. I want to talk about that a little bit. And then one other thing I've been thinking about is that rent. Commercial rent is held by banks. And then the rent, so on your home, is held by banks, the mortgage on your home. So when people stop paying, what happens? Who's out? Now, in my opinion, right, there ought to be a mechanism, because of this pandemic, to extend your lease or your mortgage. If you don't pay for 3 months, right, the terms get extended. And then who's hurt by that? Well, obviously, the owner, which is the bank, is hurt by that. How are they hurt? Because they're still going to get their money contractually. You just amended the lease. Because of this pandemic and these, let's just say, 4 months of lack of rent payment, we've now extended the lease to this, right? Or we've adjusted the monthly payment to this and the term will stay the same. You have those two options. So who's hurt? Well, ultimately, I get my money. What my cost is what I would do with that money. Should I have it and invest it? Or if I have to borrow, right, to replace that money, that's also factors into what it's going to cost me. That's ultimately the cost. So what's going to happen with all these rents, right? And we talk about the number of people in the country that 52% of people in this country live paycheck to paycheck. They've gone without a paycheck here now for going into the sixth week. And let's just say that you work 40 hours a week and you make, you know, $50,000 a year. Let's say you make $60,000 a year. That means you're making $5,000 a month. That means you're making, what, $1,200 a week, $1,250 a week. $400 doesn't replace that. All right, $400 a week doesn't replace that. So, this whole discussion about, you know, the economy or humans, you know, this dynamic decision that's becoming so hard for people, right? Somebody's got to stand up and say, it's not an either or proposition. Okay. Numbers are going to go up, and this is how we'll get through it. And this is how we all need to pay attention. So anyway, good morning to everybody on Monday. Thanks for listening. Grant Newsham going to join me in about 30 minutes. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. Check news next. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Somebody just sent me this. Mac, have you seen this? I'll get to it in a second, but it says, I think the headline is 60% of coronavirus deaths in the United States have occurred in six states. So we'll look at that. And this is dedicated to all you moms out there. Happy Mother's Day. Again, I hope you all had a great day.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
Time to check the weather in Marineland. And something's wrong. Oh. Just updated. All right. Cloudy and 62 in Quantico. Camp Lejeune down the coast has sun and 72. Sun and 77 out in 29 Palms. That's pretty normal. Clouds and 63 near the coast at Camp Pendleton. Dark cloudy 69 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark cloudy 75 at Camp Butler on Okinawa. And at Leatherneck in the Lash Garga area, it is evening and 88 degrees with cloudy skies there. And in the Alambar province, where special purpose MAGTAF hangs out. Sunny and 87 degrees in the provincial capital of Ramadi. Currently, partly cloudy and 66 here in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California. Looking for high of only 69 degrees today, 70 tomorrow, and 71 on Wednesday. That is a look at your weather. More of All Marine Radio coming up right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good,
but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The other story that yesterday took to the news was an Iranian friendly fire incident. The and moments ago, one of my favorite guys, Jack Keane, he was talking about it. So this is Jack Keane. That's John. That's Bono right there. But this is Jack Keane talking about the Iranian strike against it. So what's really odd is when the Navy does live ordnance, and as a Marine, we take precautions and we know what we're doing on ranges. And but I mean, I watch the Navy do it, and they're not as comfortable shooting, right? I mean, we shoot all the time, so we're comfortable shooting. The Navy, not so much. When they shoot, it's a big deal. And I remember watching him shoot. I was like, holy shit, man. These guys are like not really comfortable with this stuff, right? And they'd call it off in a heartbeat. And so when I don't understand how you would shoot, a friendly vessel in a I just don't know how it would be done on a range where the target is very, obvious. Everybody else is cleared out of the way if you're going to shoot live, missile ordnance. And so I don't. So anyway, here's one of our favorites, Jack Keane, Lieutenant General type, United States Army.
Fox News alert now from the Middle East. As a routine naval exercise turns deadly, Iranian state-run media reporting a missile fire during training struck a support ship, killing 19 sailors and injuring 15 others. It happened yesterday in the Gulf of Oman and has been ruled a case of friendly fire. General Jack Keane is a retired four-star general, now chairman at the Institute for the Study of War, and a Fox News senior strategic analyst. General Keane, always good to see you. I wanted to get your thoughts on this morning. Obviously, the timing of this happening, they're saying that this has been ruled an accident, but with rising tensions between the U.S. and Tehran, what do you make of all of it?
Well, United States Navy has been conducting drills also in the Persian Gulf, a little further north than this. And so have the Iranians. Some of this is routine, but there has been an increase in activity ever since Iran's military escalation started over a year ago, certainly. I take it at face value this is likely an accidental shooting, as they describe it. They normally don't report on these things, but I think given the fact there are 34 casualties and 19 or so who were killed, they didn't have much choice but to give some kind of report on it. And it looks like they were doing Navy ships were practicing targeting, and they're shooting at targets that look sort of like ships. They're simulated as such. And the ship that was hit was the one that emplaces the targets. And it likely was too close to it. So either we had a mistake made by the people who are shooting the missile. In other words, they targeted the wrong target, or they had an errant missile. And we don't know either. It won't mean anything in terms of tensions in the region. They are already there. But Iran overall, I will say, since COVID-19, has pulled back somewhat on their military escalation. They've actually pulled back on some of their operations in Syria, where they have tens of thousands of proxies as well. And they also have pulled back on their proxy rocket and missile attacks in Iraq. And COVID-19 has taken a toll in Iran that they're not willing to admit to. And many of the people, Sandra, who had already lost faith in this regime, have fundamentally now are grieved by what is happening to their population.
So there you have it. Emplacing targets and you guys get smoked. Like, I'm not sure how that happens. So anyway, that in the news. And since she was talking about it, then I thought maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea for us to listen to that. So anyway, now here's one of the things before I get to other news. I wanted to play this clip because, you know, again, in my lifetime, conspiracy, that word has only been used in my life to when, you know, associated with Watergate. And it's not a word that anybody should throw out lightly. And I certainly don't. But when, you know, you saw those documents and Barack Obama's name comes up, and you have the Attorney General expressing surprise that she doesn't, that he knew this and she did not, and he knew it in detail, then I'm not sure what else you call it. This thing that, in my opinion, is so far outside the rule of law that, you know, Barack Obama, you know, was protesting against. So anyway, this is Maria, and again, Maria Bartiromo, again, she's nobody's hack, okay? She's nobody's hack. So this is her talking to Sidney Powell, who's General Flynn's attorney. Okay, so listen to this.
Welcome back.
And one of the things that Maria Bartiromo does is she tries to lay out a timeline. For all of this. And so that's what I find interesting about it. So here she is.
Welcome back. Well, General Michael Flynn greeted the news of the DOJ dismissing the charges against him by tweeting the words, "Justice for all," with a video of his grandson reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. But the federal judge overseeing the case still has to sign off on this. Joining me right now is General Flynn's lead attorney, Sidney Powell. Sidney, it is great to see you. Congratulations to you. You've worked hard on this. Let me ask you to start off. How is General Flynn doing? What is his reaction this morning?
His reaction at first was one of disbelief and relief at the same time. It's going to take a while to process it. He's obviously very grateful to the Attorney General and Mr. Jensen for having the integrity to dig for the truth and to get it out for the American people to see. And he is looking forward to spending time with his family. I'm sure he'll have a statement to make sometime in the near future.
Sidney, this is obviously a big step toward justice, and our viewers heard this here first. We knew this was coming, but Judge Sullivan still has to sign off on this, Sidney. He's got to sign off on the motion. When are you expecting that to happen?
I would expect it to happen tomorrow or sometime early this week. It's a matter of the prosecutor's actual discretion. Judge Sullivan, according to a couple of Supreme Court decisions, I'm sure he will follow the law there and sign off on it.
Now, I know that there were a few things that we learned in these transcripts that were released as well. And in terms of the way they violated General Flynn's rights, they did not mention the 1001. Tell me about Section 1001 and why that's important, Sydney.
Well, it's the statute that makes it a federal felony to lie to agents. These agents specifically schemed and planned with each other how to not tip him off that he was even the person being investigated. In fact, according to Comey's testimony that's attached to the exhibits they filed in the motion to dismiss, they just simply said, you know, we'd like to send a couple of agents by to talk to you. And of course, General Flynn said, sure. And he saw them as allies. They encouraged him to stay that way. They deliberately did not tell him about 1001 because they didn't want to trigger the slightest suspicion in his mind that he was being investigated or should be concerned about anything. So they kept him relaxed and unguarded deliberately as part of their effort to set him up and frame him. We do have the agent's raw notes, but we do not have the original 302. And we now know from additional text messages produced that there were substantial alterations to the 302s. We have some of those changes between February 10th and 11th, and those are attached as exhibits to one of our briefs that are available on my website.
Now, think about that. You don't have the original document that was written post-interview that was modified. You only have modifications to a modification, and the original somehow or other is not there. I mean, stuff like that. That's bad stuff. All right.
So, you know, Sydney, I want you to walk through this timeline for us, because they also violated White House protocol by ambushing him. And we know that. We've played that soundbite of Jim Comey saying, oh, it was chaotic. I just sent a few agents over there and just figured it would be better to do it that way. So let's go through the General Flynn crossfire razor timeline. And that begins on August 15th, when Peter Strzok, then FBI agent, sent to his girlfriend a text saying to the extent saying something like, well, I wish I could believe what you said in Andy's office, but we need an insurance policy that was discussed in McCabe's office. The following day, on August 16th, they open a crossfire razor probe into General Flynn. And then on August 17th, FBI agents were sent to a presidential briefing for nominee Trump. They did so why? You think they just were trying to assess General Flynn to try to get something on him then as well in that briefing?
Oh, that's what one of the agents testified to the inspector general. It's in his report that came out in December. They were specifically, or he was specifically sent into that briefing to assess and gauge General Flynn's mannerisms, to collect what information he could, because General Flynn was there to notice his reaction to any mention of Russia. And that was done all expressly in case they needed to interview him later, i.e. if Trump was elected and General Flynn was put in the White House.
Unbelievable. Fast forward to January 2017, Sydney, because this morning President Obama is out trashing this exoneration. He's basically saying that the rule of law is being lost and that there's no precedent for all of this. So we go to January 2017 and February 2017. The morning of January 4th, the FBI drafts a document to close the Flynn probe, crossfire razor. They wanted to close it. They had nothing, so they want to close it. So the next day, on later that afternoon, Peter Strzok texts, don't close the razor yet. And the seventh floor is involved. And then there's a meeting in President Obama's Oval Office. Talk to us about that, Sydney, because Sal Yates was there, Jim Comey was there, John Brennan was there, James Clapper was there, briefing President Obama in the Oval Office on the Russia probe. Joe Biden and Susan Rice were there as well. This was January 5th, 2017. Walk us through it.
Now, all in there talking about this event. And so when you talk about the rule of law has been thrashed already, because all the FISA stuff is already, you know, is already underway. I mean, it's amazing. And it's honestly, it's amazing. And now they're in here, you know, they're in the evidently the Oval Office, talking with the president about that.
Exactly. Well, the day before, Comey had found and McCabe had found the transcripts of Flynn's call with Kislyak, and he briefed Clapper on it immediately. Clapper then immediately went and briefed President Obama on it.
And this is the same James Clapper who testified under oath that he never saw any evidence of Flynn's collaboration with the Russians. So this is that Clapper, that guy who testified to that under oath.
Then they have the Oval Office meeting on the 5th. Comey admits in his testimony that the FBI are the people that unmasked General Flynn, our people, whatever that means. And at the meeting,
that's a 10-year prison sentence, by the way.
On the 5th, Sally Yates was stunned because Obama mentions to her out of the blue about the call and the transcript of the call. She knew nothing about it because Comey hadn't briefed DOJ. Yes. Yes.
Yep.
So so then they dispatched Comey the very next morning to brief President Trump only on the salacious aspects of the dossier on January 6th to set the news hook for BuzzFeed and CNN to run with the dossier they knew was a lie. Then Peter Strzok is watching CNN report on that and text about he and Priestap sitting there watching it and using it as a pretext to go interview some people. So the whole thing was orchestrated and set up within the FBI, Clapper, Brennan, and in the Oval Office meeting that day with President Obama.
So you think this goes all the way up to the top to President Obama?
Absolutely.
Who's going to be charged?
I have no idea. That's up to John Durham and Attorney General
Sidney
Barr.
We got to jump, but it's great to talk with you. Congratulations, Sidney Powell. We will be right back.
Amazing, right? Amazing. Now, I don't care where you sit on the political spectrum. Again, one of the things that I hate is when, people can't say, Bill Clinton's a great politician. When you say Barack Obama's, not a great person who has an incredible feel for people, right? When you can't recognize things that are true. And anybody who sees this chain of events, when you can't see that this is not supposed to happen in the United States, then don't have a conversation with them about it. Because clearly, and again, I think this is what happens when you have news organizations that aren't devoted to the truth. And news organizations are big rooms, okay, big organizations. The opinion floor should be completely separate from the news floor. The news floor in a democracy is a really sacred place. You're supposed to report the truth. But where we are in this country is you don't have too many people, that report the truth anymore. And this is one of the things that you see because of it. Because of it. And so, so if that's not a conspiracy, what would you call it? Yeah. You wouldn't call it anything because that's exactly what that is. That's a conspiracy. And it's pretty stunning to think about, right? That these meetings, have gone on and nobody says, hey, well, let me go back to, right, this is all predicated on that dossier. If anybody looks into that and see who funded it and to see that none of it's true and we're using it as the basis for all of this, what we're orchestrating here, this is dead. That's the rule of law. That's what the rule of law says you're supposed to be concerned about. So anyway. A ton of stuff over the weekend. I didn't even get to this article about rent, right? Yes, and the thing about 60% of deaths, I want to say, are in four states or something like that: New York, Pennsylvania, Louisiana, New Jersey, and Connecticut, something like that. And that is 60% of the COVID-19 deaths in the United States are in those four or five states. I wish I could, pull that thing up again. So what does that mean for everybody else relative to opening? And at the end of the day, will the coronavirus, this version of the coronavirus, COVID-19, will it go through the United States like most other viruses have? Except the difference in this time is that we overreacted and we materially impacted our economy, the futures of people, the livelihoods of people, and created our own recession because of the thought that we could somehow or other stop and start the nation, right, and treat this like it was going to be different than every other pandemic, which sweeps through the general population, tends to, and targets certain members. So anyway, I'll save the article about U.S. landlords and retailers. U.S. landlords, retailers play hardball as mall rent collections plunge. And there's a quote in here that's pretty interesting. Let me see if I can find it. "90% of the malls in this country won't be here in a year." And the rational basis for that is profit margins in malls are smaller. You know, retail storefronts, you know, business has been dug into by the internet. That's why we need to start taxing everything that's on the internet. Right? Some states don't tax internet purchases, and that's ridiculous. And that was originally done to encourage that, you know, line of industry. Well, they don't need any more encouragement. They're destroying other businesses. So anyway, they need to pay. So we'll talk about that as well. Anyway, but yeah, as you can see, a ton of news. So don't touch that dial. Grant Newsham's going to join us next here on a Monday of a Monday edition of Allmarine Radio here on the 11th of May, 2020. So more of Allmarine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.